The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Todd Starnes Show, sponsored by Legacy Precious Metals. There's never been a better time to invest in precious metals. Visit LegacyPMInvestments.com. That's LegacyPMInvestments.com.
Live from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's favorite gun-toting, Bible-clinging, deplorable American.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah.
Wherever you're listening across this, the greatest nation God ever blessed, we welcome you to a Tuesday edition of the Todd Starnes radio program on more than 100 outstanding radio stations coast to coast and streaming live, among other places, at ToddStarnes.com. Hello, fellow patriots. Jeff Stein filling in for Todd today. He's taking care of some other business that necessitated being away from the studio. Busy guy, you know. But it's my privilege to fill in from Iowa's home to Todd Starnes. My home base, News Talk 1540 KXEL in Cedar Rapids and Waterloo, Iowa. The 50,000-watt blowtorch scorching middle America with accurate news and reasonable views. We are in the Liberty University studio as usual, and we would love to hear from you this hour. We have a jam-packed program with guests that Grace has lined up, but we have time to hear from you at 844-747-8868. I'll say that again. It's 844-747-8868, and we look forward to hearing from you during this three-hour connection. Lots of folks to get to, lots of topics to get to, but I want to start with, as you might imagine, the possible indictment of the former president of the United States, Donald J. Trump. Fox News is reporting that the indictment will not happen today, that there is another witness to go before the grand jury on Wednesday, tomorrow. And so now the talk is that this may not happen until next week. I want to suggest that the former president has once again gotten so deep inside the heads of his opponents, they are spitting, they are seething. This is the moment that they wanted to see. They have long dreamed of this president being led in handcuffs somewhere. I have a longtime friend. He's a very good person. He's just horribly misguided politically, but he has often talked about, well, this is the thing, right? They're going to go to the White House when Trump was in office. They're going to go to the White House. They're going to lead him out in cuffs. They just cannot possibly get past the hatred they have for this individual, simply because he had the audacity to support the American people and put government back in the hands of the people as opposed to the swamp monsters in Washington. This is all about power. And so they are going to try to misuse prosecutorial power to have him indicted. Well, again, the prosecutor there is a political hack. He ran on a campaign of saying, I'll get Trump even though others haven't. When you as a prosecutor, now this is me as an attorney speaking. I have worked for a state attorney general's office. I have done criminal defense work. I've done civil work. So I've been on both sides of how these things come to be. If as a prosecutor, your election slogan has to do with targeting a certain individual, that is malfeasance of the highest order. You cannot trust anything that comes out of Alvin Bragg's office based on his public statements. But yet, he does have the power. Yet, he does have the ability to present evidence before a grand jury that would be favorable toward an indictment, not conviction, indictment. And we have, by the way, legal experts who will be joining the Todd Starnes Show in each of our next 2 hours, hour two, hour three, to go over this in some greater detail. Folks who know how to explain this so that we really understand all the nuances. But the bottom line of it is, in essence, about anybody can get indicted. And with the sort of dual system of justice, especially in a blue city ridden with corruption like New York, be pretty easy to get convicted. Also be pretty easy for that conviction to be overturned on appeal, but that doesn't matter to the left. Hauling Trump in, having him fingerprinted, having his mugshot across the country. They'll put it as the screensaver on their computers. It'll be the wallpaper on their phones. They can hardly wait. That's the end goal. It's not justice. The end goal is to try to humiliate Trump in the hopes that he does not get the nomination in 2024, in the hopes that he does not win election in 2024. And by dragging the process out, an indictment now, when would a trial be? Well, that's down the line, etc. It doesn't matter about the ultimate rightness or wrongness. It doesn't matter if it is overturned on appeal, which so many people, left, right, or center, think it would be. Any conviction would be overturned on appeal because this is such a sham. But it doesn't matter. If the goal is to keep Trump from power, they get to exercise power. And here's what I hate to tell you this, but I think you know. There are plenty of folks who have an R for Republican by their name who are not upset about what's happening in New York. They, too, want to hold on to their power. They, too, are swamp monsters. They, too, don't want you getting in the way. They can keep you at bay as long as Trump's not there. Because as the former president has pointed out, they're going to get him, or going after him. That doesn't mean they'll get him. They're going after him because they're really going after you and us, all of us. But in true Trump fashion, he is such a master at public relations. He has taken this situation and turned it to his advantage, again, in a way that is just making the left fall all over themselves. Think about how this all played out. There had been some news stories bumping along that there was this grand jury meeting and that the idea was the hush money payment, which, as we'll discuss during the course of the program today, an entirely legal payment, a legal expense to settle a case before it goes to court. There's nothing wrong with that. Now, you may not agree with the premise, as in an extramarital affair and you try to keep somebody quiet. You may not agree with the propriety of the action, and I respect that, and I don't disagree. But we're talking about the legalistics here. A payment made to resolve a claim that could be brought in court. That's legal. That's entirely legal. And to say that the motive for the payment was so that it would not adversely affect an election and therefore it's a campaign contribution that was not reported, this is the most twisted logic and thinking. But again, can New York make it stick? Maybe. There's plenty of corruption there in those supposed halls of justice. So we knew this was kind of bumping around, but what did Mr. Trump do? The former president came out early on Saturday morning and said, you know, I think I'm going to be arrested probably Tuesday. Could be as soon as Tuesday. What happened, folks, to the news cycle the rest of the weekend? What happened to the news cycle, in essence, from then to this very point? Completely changed, didn't it? I mean, after all, your March Madness bracket was already probably busted, if you care about such things, and I don't, given the woke culture of that these days. But now all the focus is on Trump saying he's going to be arrested. And that, in the vacuum of a weekend, without a lot of news going on, that led to a lot of people actually analyzing the case. And it led to a lot of people, even on the partisan left, having to say, well, it's a little tough, might be kind of hard to prove here. And it led folks who are more rational legal experts to point out what a sham, what a fallacy the whole thing is. Such a thin tissue of evidence that they might try to stitch together with something else that has never been found to work. A combination of factors in state and federal law that have never been mixed together successfully. So this is all out there to where we've spent the whole weekend. We now spent yesterday, Monday, chewing on all of this, the propriety of it. Will they go through the sham of a perp walk, as they call it, where a defendant is taken through the front door of the courthouse in front of God and everybody, handcuffed, the whole bit? Never mind the fact that that could expose the former president to a great degree of harm. I don't think the Secret Service would like to see that situation. But, of course, those on the left, well, you know, if something happens to Trump, well, you know, not our fault. Too bad. And you know they won't shed a tear. Because, again, this is a craven desire for power, everything they do. Masterful move on President Trump's part yet again to take charge of this conversation. He has stolen all the thunder from the New York District Attorney. At this point, and the way this works is, the grand jury completes its work. If they reach an indictment, it is handed to the judge. The judge then says to the prosecutor, okay, now the grand jury has come up with this. Now go forth and serve the paperwork, et cetera, et cetera. And we now know, apparently, if you can believe the leaks, that there's another witness tomorrow yet, so this isn't going to come for some time. In theory, not today. If that changes, heaven knows, we'll let you know immediately. But normally a prosecutor gets to make this announcement with all sorts of fanfare and fol-de-rol and puffing up their chest and talking about no one is above the law. The New York District Attorney was relishing this, probably bought a new suit for the occasion. And Trump stole all the thunder by declaring on his social media platform, because they had barred his voice from being heard on the others, so he went out in Trump fashion and started his own. He posts a video saying, I believe I'm going to be arrested. Notice he didn't say indicted. He said arrested because, again, they can. They could go and lead him away from wherever he is. They wouldn't do that for other people. They sure wouldn't do it for a member of the Biden family, but that's another conversation. So Trump gets out and says, I believe I'm going to be arrested. He takes complete charge of the conversation. He steals the thunder from District Attorney Alvin Bragg, who now has nothing more than to say, he's been indicted, as he already told you he would, and it takes all the thunder out of it. He controls the conversation perfectly. Now, the fact that he may be indicted and arrested, that's not good at all. Probably not proper. Probably wouldn't be filed in any other jurisdiction. But this is taking a negative, turning it into a public relations positive. And again, look at how Trump managed his public matters, celebrity feuds, etc., before he ran for president. And look how he dismissed each candidate challenging him, one after the other. This is the same thing. I'm going to own the conversation. I'm going to paint myself as the victim and let the chips fall where they may. One brief caveat before we take the break. I don't care for the fact that he said Americans should go protest this. That was probably implied. Had he left that out, people would have shown their displeasure in a variety of ways. I don't think he needed to say that because it's going to invariably lead to comparisons with January 6th, and we don't need that aggravation. But other than that, the fact that he came out and, in essence, broke the news and stole their thunder, well, bravo once again, Mr. President. 844-747-8868 is how you can reach us. We'll take your calls in the next segment. I'm Jeff Stein, filling in for Todd. Thanks for being along on this edition of the Todd Starnes Show.
The Biden administration has caused a financial crisis, and they don't have a clue how to fix it, folks. Our economy is in trouble, and you need to take steps to protect yourself. Now, if all your money is tied up in stocks, bonds, and traditional markets, you're vulnerable. Gold is one of the best ways to protect your retirement. No matter what happens, you own your gold. It's real, it's physical, and it's always been valuable since the dawn of time. Legacy Precious Metals is the company I trust for investing in gold. They can help you roll your retirement account into a gold-backed IRA where you still own the physical gold. They can also ship gold and precious metals safely and securely to your house. Did you know $1 million worth of gold can fit in a shoebox? Call Legacy at 866-649-0304 or visit them online at legacypminvestments.com. That's 866-649-0304 or visit them online at legacypminvestments.com.
Welcome back to the Todd Starn Show. Jeff Stein filling in for Todd today. I've got 4 minutes and two phone callers. Let's see how good I am. Victor, you're listening online in Maryland. What's on your mind today, sir?
I am urging Trump not to surrender. I am worried that once he's arrested and put in jail, somebody's going to try and pull the Jeffrey Epstein on him. I don't want to hear on the news that Trump committed suicide or make it look like he committed suicide. That's what worries me once they get him into custody.
And he'd wind up being the only person arrested in New York City to be held in custody with their liberal no bail laws. But I suppose they'd cook up something on that. Do you really think that even with Secret Service, that even the left would pull something so obvious?
I wouldn't put it past them, because I was sitting on my front porch last week and I heard a passerby on her phone talking about, I wish someone would kill Trump once and for all.
Oh, jeez. Oh, goodness. Victor, thanks so much for listening from Maryland and calling the Todd Starn Show. I have to agree. I mean, you've seen people on Twitter who wind up saying after they release some information, by the way, I did not commit suicide. They say that in gallows humor regarding the Epstein situation. Steve, you're listening in Arkansas to the flagship, the Mighty 990 KWAM. What's on your mind today, sir?
Hey, Jeff. I have another theory about why the arrest was postponed today.
Okay.
I agree with you. Trump kind of put them on their left foot the way he came out this weekend and spoke on the thing. And when he said, mentioned protests, I think the FBI put a hiatus on it because they haven't had time to orchestrate another insurrection yet. It takes a lot of logistics to put those insurrections together. They've got people scattered all over the country. Their operatives are all, you know, they're chasing families, parents at school board meetings, and Ray Epps is all the way out there in Arizona. They've got to live give the FBI a little more time to put this thing together.
Oh, goodness. I mean, you're right. When we all knew January 6th was the day that the Electoral College votes would be tallied, would be counted, and so that was on the calendar. Yeah, he probably did mess up their plans for such a thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's, you know, they need, the Democratic Party has their rent-a-riot group like Antifa. The FBI has got to put them together, an erection team that they can just mobilize instantly if they're going to keep up with this election cycle that's coming up.
Do you think the former president should have mentioned that folks should protest, or should he have just let that alone?
To be honest with you, I don't know that it makes that much difference, Jeff.
Yeah,
if they hadn't have picked that apart, they would have found something else that he said that they would try to pick apart. And you know, that all depends on, from what I'm hearing, what's going on there today. The only protesters that have shown up were Trump protesters.
That's a very fair point, but as you said, the FBI hasn't had time to set up their own insurrection yet. Steve, thanks so much for listening to the Mighty 990 and checking in from Arkansas. Greatly appreciate it. We're going to take a bottom of the hour break now, and when we come back from the Liberty University studio, Congressman Pat Fallon from Northeast Texas, he's on the Oversight Committee, and he'll join us live coming up after this break. I'm Jeff Stein, filling in for Todd. Thanks for being along on the Todd Starn Show.
Just when you thought it could not get any better, Mike Lindell with MyPillow is launching the MyPillow 2.0. When Mike invented MyPillow, it had everything you could ever want in a pillow. Now, nearly 20 years later, he discovered a new technology that makes it even better. The MyPillow 2.0 has the patented adjustable fill of the original MyPillow, and now with a brand new fabric that's made with a temperature-regulating thread. The MyPillow 2.0 is the softest, smoothest, and coolest pillow you'll ever own. And for my listeners, an exclusive. The MyPillow 2.0 is buy one, get one free with the promo code STARNS. MyPillow 2.0 temperature regulating technology is 100% made in the USA and comes with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Just go to MyPillow.com/Starns. That's MyPillow.com/Starns for the buy one, get one free offer and enter the promo code STARNS.
Welcome back to the Todd Starn Show. Jeff Stein filling in for Todd today. He'll be back tomorrow. And we come to you, as always, from the Liberty University studio. 844-747-8868 is how you can reach us, and we'll take your calls as soon as we have an opportunity at 844-747-8868. We are expecting to hear from Congressman Pat Fallon of Texas, and the team in Memphis will tell me when the congressman is on the line. We'll go to him as soon as he is available. In the last segment, you heard a couple of callers, one from Arkansas, one from Maryland, and both showed healthy, appropriate distrust of this process. If Trump is taken into custody, will they pull a Jeffrey Epstein on him? If there are protests, are they actually engineered by the FBI? It's really a sad state of affairs in this country when we doubt the law enforcement hierarchy, the governmental side of it. Not rank and file, not those who wear the badge, not doubting those who put their life on the line every day when they go to work. I certainly don't put my life on the line when I go to work. They do. We're not talking about the rank and file. We're talking about the deep state. We're talking about the swamp. We're talking about the fact that we just don't trust in our government the way that we used to. And that is indeed unfortunate. Representative Fallon will join us coming up in just a little more than 10 minutes. And we'll hear from him. He's on the House Oversight Committee, by the way. And so they are taking care of all manner of business these days, and I'm sure he has some opinions on a few topics that I've jotted down. So Congressman Fallon joining us a little more than 10 minutes. Your calls between now and then at 844-747-8868. I want to tell you about something that I know they all do it. I know this is swampy stuff, but it shows you that once a certain group of people get into power, well, heavens, they just cannot imagine not being catered to. Their every whim not being satisfied. One of the latest examples happened last week, and we're talking about the Vice President of the United States, Kamala Harris. Now, I know about this because I'm right here in Iowa, and it is the first in the nation caucus state. And even though Democrats have tried to rig the nomination for Joe Biden and move Iowa out of the way, we still have a state law that says the Democrats will caucus before anybody else. So let's just see how this all plays out. You know, you can get rid of us, but not that easily. Well, in any event, Kamala Harris came to Des Moines, Iowa last Thursday. And the idea was to participate in a panel discussion about so-called abortion rights. Now, this was not an event that had been scheduled by people in town, and she then was invited. This was a made-for-Kamala event. And it came up very little notice. Usually you know about such things some period of time in advance. But all of a sudden, the White House said that the vice president would be in Des Moines and she'd be participating in this panel conversation about abortion rights, and they all will nod solemnly, and she sits behind the seal of the vice president and talking about how, you get the idea. Well, you know, you might think, well, why would she come to Des Moines? Why on short notice? I'm going to switch topics and you'll see how they'll come together, though. Last Sunday is when the NCAA determined who would be playing in the men's basketball championship, known as March Madness. And those first round games were Thursday and Friday across the country. And one of the host sites for games on Thursday was downtown Des Moines, Iowa. They've hosted it before, get a lot of good reaction. They do a very nice job. And one of the schools playing in the Des Moines Regional was Howard University. They were taking on Kansas. Now let's put these two together, friends. Kamala Harris is an alum of Howard University. Howard University was playing in the NCAA playoffs, the March Madness, in Des Moines. All of a sudden, the office of the vice president, the White House, scheduled an event for her in Des Moines. So she did the quote-unquote abortion rights event, and then she and her husband made their way to a suite at the arena where they watched the game, and then she went and talked to the players in the locker room afterwards. A rather cringe-worthy address, but then again, if she gave a latte order at Starbucks, it would be cringeworthy and probably not at all what she had ordered, because she can't put a sentence together. Now, who cares, right? I mean, she's in Des Moines. The game's in Des Moines. I don't know if she went to the shopping district as well or had a burger at one of the fine restaurants. Well, here's how it matters. Because she did a, quote, official event, as in this, quote, abortion rights panel, that was official business, official government business to travel here and talk about, quote, abortion rights. And then she went to the ball game. But since it was an official event, guess who paid for her flight? You did. You did. She wanted to come see the basketball game and manufactured a public event so that we, the taxpayers, would pay for the big shiny plane to come to Des Moines so she could go to the ball game. Now, I'm fine if you want to support your team. Just don't do it on my dime. This is not to say that she's the only one who does this. A week before, the president signed another executive order trying to limit our firearms, and he did it in California. Why did he do it in California? Because shortly after, he then was the headline speaker at a fundraiser bringing in gazillions of dollars for Democrat causes. Because there was a, quote, piece of official business, unquote, tied to the trip, you paid for him to go to a fundraiser to help raise money to keep him in office and people like him. Republicans have done it too over time. It is not right in any respect. But what it shows is the high-handed nature of this. It is one thing to add something onto a trip. I've done this before. Go to a conference, make a presentation, add a couple of days on the end if it's a nice climate, and, you know, sort of enjoy life. But, first of all, it wasn't taxpayer money. That's really the big deal. But second, I'm already doing an event, and I add on to it. these people, and again, I know you could point to plenty of Republicans who have probably done it as well, because this is the swamp. The swamp is a bipartisan entity. Absolutely dragging us down. All right. It's much different when you create your own event so you get to do what you want to do. You know, I didn't plan a vacation and then add on a business trip so I could pay for it all. And again, none of it was with taxpayer dollars. So do you think that the swamp is pretty swampy? Sure is. Because if you're vice president, you get to go to the ball game to cheer on your alma mater, and we all get to pay for it. That's how they operate. 844-747-8868 is how you can reach us. That's the number that Pete used, calling in from down the road in central Iowa. He's listening to the live stream. Pete, thanks for joining the Todd Starnes Show. How are you today?
Hey, I'm doing great. I live in Iowa.
Yes, sir. Where at?
About 60 miles southwest of you, down on Interstate 80 between Des Moines and Iowa City.
All right. Know it well. What's on your mind today? I think you want to talk about another fellow Iowan.
Yeah. Now, this is, to me, the brilliant strategy is Carrie Lake's strategy. She's having a prayer rally right now, and that's what we should do. We should pray rather than protest. Go to a church, say if they went into New York or D.C. and had prayer rallies at churches or cathedrals, how would they stage an insurrection? These are people praying. I'd love to see the TV cameraman come in, and here's a church, people praying, peaceful, and the FBI or DOJ try to stage some kind of phony insurrection.
Well, I tell you, when you recall that President Obama was the one criticizing people clinging to guns and Bibles, it wouldn't surprise me. And again, these are the folks that during COVID wanted to arrest ministers for daring to lead worship. But that's an excellent idea, Pete. Thanks for calling in from Central Iowa. Go ahead.
Statement. Maybe President Trump should come to Iowa like Carrie Lake was and just stay here, because it's New York, D.C., California, where all the trouble is.
Yeah.
If he would come into Iowa like Carrie Lake did, a week ago, down to Davenport and Des Moines, he could stay, you know, go from the Dakotas down through Texas, and he wouldn't have any trouble like he does with New York and D.C.
You have a spare room if he wants to. If he just wants to squat there at your house, Pete, you got a spare bed?
Yeah, he could. And
all right,
you know, there's a lot of you could buy a $400,000 mansion in Iowa versus a a ranch house in California or New York.
Yeah, or just a one room cabin. Those places.
Yeah, and even Bill Gates is buying land here.
Oh, we need to have better security. That's all I can say. Pete, thanks for calling in from Central Iowa. I'm going to be near you in Des Moines tonight after I get done here. Carrie Lake was a native of the Quad Cities of Iowa and graduated from the University of Iowa. And one other time when I was on the program, we had Pastor Jackson Lahmeyer of Oklahoma on. He is the head of a group called Pastors for Trump. And to Pete's excellent point, they had an online prayer meeting earlier this weekend. It must have been last night. And President Trump participated in that. And so what an excellent idea by Pete. Congressman Pat Fallon is scheduled to join us after this break. I'm Jeff Stein, and this is the Todd Starnes Show. Welcome back to the Todd Starnes Show. Jeff Stein filling in for Todd today from the Liberty University studio. We go now to the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line, and we are joined by Congressman Pat Fallon. He represents the good people of the 4th Congressional District in Northeast Texas. Congressman Fallon, thanks so much for joining the Starnes Show today.
Jeff, it's an honor and a privilege, my friend. How are you?
I am doing very well. You've been very busy on the Oversight Committee. Of all the things you've seen so far coming across your desk, what's the thing that really makes you raise your eyebrows?
Well, the more we learn about Biden's family's finances, Jeff, to be honest, the more really chilling it is and shocking that absolutely how blatantly corrupt they are and that the mainstream media won't report on it. I mean, you got a guy, Hunter Biden, who was basically, to be frank, he was a life loser. He was involved in hard drugs, prostitution, et cetera. And then suddenly he becomes a multimillionaire international businessman. And the only thing that changed in his life was his father became vice president. Then his father in 2019, when he's running for president, says, hey, listen, whoa, I don't know what Hunter's doing. I don't know any of his business associates, nothing. We find that to be a lie that he's actually met with and helped scores of his business associates. And then lo and behold, the Biden family has 150 suspicious activity reports, which are reports generated by financial institutions when they suspect fraud, money laundering, sexual trafficking, something along those lines. 150 of them. Congress traditionally has had access to those reports if they want them. And we've been denied access to these 150 FARs for the last 2 years. That boggles my mind.
When I've seen the list of payments, I mean, it's all reaches of the family. It is like everybody's pocket is getting lined, not just the ones who don't seem to have a real obvious, like Hunter, what's his obvious skill set, but it's all these other members of the family. I mean, they are just proud about spreading it around, and it seems to me that they just think that they're so deep into the swamp, nothing would ever happen, nobody will say a word.
Right, you have one of Hunter's, the Biden family business associates receive a $3 million wire from China with some folks that have links to the Communist Party there. And then he sends that money, he wires it to another business associate who then distributes over $1 million to Hunter Biden, James Biden, Hannah Biden, and another Biden just named Biden. We don't know who that is yet. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. Imagine when we get access to, because apparently they're finally going to yield because we have subpoena power, that they're going to actually give us access to these 150, because that's what we should have been doing 2 years ago. If you have nothing to hide, Jeff, then the first thing you should have done was to say, listen, I'll give you all my documents. This is all malarkey. It's a bag of nothing. And then we can move on. But they've done the exact opposite for over 2 years.
Congressman Pat Fallon from Texas joining us on the Todd Starn Show. Jeff Stein filling in for Todd today. You had a bipartisan effort in Congress with regard to our investments and financing and ESG. And yet this president said, nope, I'm going to use my first presidential veto to have woke investing. What kind of signal does that send?
No, it really is frightening. So, you know, for your listeners, the ESG is environmental, social, and governance. And it allows the financial institutions to use those and score and certain investments based on those criteria, which is really just the left's political tool to mold businesses and financial institutions to doing their bidding to advance their social ideology. It's incredibly dangerous because you should be making investment decisions based on, oh, I don't know, fiduciary responsibility, maybe to evaluate investment based on the financial benefits and the returns to your investor. That's the only thing. I don't want my money to be Republican or Democrat. I want it to be smart. And for them to sit there and want to say, well, if it's left-leaning causes, if they are donating to Black Lives Matter, maybe, you know, invest there. That has no bearing whatsoever. And I think this may be partially the cause of the Silicon Valley Bank collapse.
Well, again, most people investing, and I've got about a minute left before we have to end for the hour, Congressman, but most people investing, they want return on the investment at the highest legal rate possible. And when you start putting in other factors, it's the same thing as this administration. We don't care about your competency. We care about your characteristics of birth. This is no plan for success, is it?
No. We want you to invest basically with our folks, is what they're saying, which is ridiculous. And that's why there was a bipartisan effort. And it passed in the House, and it passed in the Senate, and he vetoed it. And, he blames, what's his boogeyman all the time? MAGA Republicans. It's MAGA. Oh, really? Then why was it a bipartisan vote? That's a bunch of horse hockey. And this president is just always takes left-hand turns. That's all he ever does.
Literally and figuratively. Congressman Fallon, thank you so much for taking the time. You feel pretty good about how things are going so far with a Republican-led House?
Yes, I love it. You know what we ask? Let's not be John Boehner 2.0. Let's go and do it. Let's be bold. Reagan, bold colors, not soft pastels. Yeah.
Congressman Pat Fallon of Texas, he joined us to close out this hour of the Todd Starnes radio program. Jeff Stein filling in. Stay tuned for Hour 2, folks.
From the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's Common Sense Conservative Commentary from Todd Starnes.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Wherever you're listening across this, the greatest nation God ever blessed, welcome to hour number two of a Tuesday edition of the Todd Starnes radio program. Coast to coast on more than 100 outstanding radio stations and streaming live, among other places, at ToddStarnes.com. Hello, fellow patriots. Jeff Stein in for Todd today. He's taking care of some business outside the studio. He'll be back tomorrow. Glad that you're along with us here in the Liberty University studio. Join the Coast to Coast conversation, if you would, 844-747-8868. That's 844-747-8868. We'll take your calls in the next segment, but joining us now on the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line, a return guest to the program, she is attorney and nationally known news analyst. You see her on Newsmax, all manner of places, Dr. Wendy Patrick. She is online, WendyPatrickPhD.com. Dr. Patrick, thanks so much for taking time.
Hey, it's always a pleasure to join you.
I wanted to have you explain some things to us about the normal grand jury process, and this has to do with all the news about will the president, the former president, be indicted or not. Talk about what the grand jury process is and why a prosecutor might wish to employ that as opposed to independently making a charging decision herself or himself.
Well, I'd need the entire rest of the hour, Jeff, 5 minutes after now. So if we can go for the full hour, I can answer that question. But let me give you the Facebook highlights reel of that question as it relates to President Trump. As you mentioned, and as you know, as a lawyer, you can go either way. You can charge directly. You can take something to a grand jury. And let me even break it down a little further. There are different types of grand juries. Some are going to be coming back with an indictment. Some are not. There are special grand juries. But one thing they all have in common is that their proceedings are secret. And that is supposed to be by design so that they're not unduly influenced by other things going on in the world. But having said that, there have been many instances of grand jurors being able to talk to the press and being able to talk with the community. So in a variety of ways, it's an investigative tool. Very different than an adversarial proceeding, but one of the reasons that we see the former president being plagued by grand jury proceedings is it leaves a lot of us in the dark wondering what are they talking about, because there aren't cameras in there, nor are reporters allowed, and that's what makes it a little bit different from our usual proceedings.
Dr. Wendy Patrick, career prosecutor, joining us on the Todd Starnes Show. Jeff Stein filling in for Todd. A lot of times you'll have a prosecutor opt to go the grand jury route to avoid the implication of politics or favoritism, either because of a partisan political issue or because the prosecutor is closely involved with the case. I'm thinking of a murder case in my hometown, and the victim had worked in the court system. And so the local prosecutor said, look, we're too close to this. And they took it to a grand jury, and the state attorney general handled everything. Is there some rationale that you can divine as to why they went the grand jury route in this particular case?
No, I'd be guessing, and that's one of the things I try never to do as a prosecutor, is guess. Because one thing we do know is behind the scenes, whatever evidence that they are looking at, we only know a fraction of. I say that because the public often scratches their head, and the court of public opinion lights up with ideas as to why different jurisdictions are pursuing different types of people. And in this case, why pursue Donald Trump now? This is a stale case. It's so 2016, right? It's Stormy Daniels. I don't know about you, Jeff, but most of my colleagues think the grand jury is deliberating over January 6th. And they're just surprised to hear, no, actually, this is about a hush money payment made before he was elected president. But what else is going on there behind the scenes? That is one of the things that makes grand jury proceedings unique, is they are used, as you mentioned, in a fashion that would avoid having everybody following and weighing in on the case, because they might be able to guess. But that shouldn't be what influences the evidence that's presented. Now, this is a little bit different, Jeff. Let me just say, it's unusual to have a witness volunteer to be a grand jury witness. And remember the Michael Cohen rebuttal witness, the ex-lawyer that testified yesterday. That's a little bit unusual. But I want to say, what about the Donald Trump saga isn't unusual? I mean, if you're in the position of having to decide whether or not to charge him criminally, civilly, whatever it is, with anything, you're probably going to really think it through. You're going to roundtable it. You're going to talk to neighboring jurisdictions that might have their own investigations pending, which also is true here, by the way. And there's just so much to the analysis that I, for one, can't wait to learn more when we finally have some kind of outcome, whether it's an indictment or not, as to what were they talking about.
And once again, the concept here is that the prosecutor in a grand jury situation, typically they present evidence. There is typically no rebuttal, although the president, the former president and his lawyer, they were invited, quote unquote, to participate. Rarely does that happen, to my understanding. And so you're going to get the evidence in the light most favorable to the prosecution that would lead to a charge or an indictment, but that is a long way from the standard needed in a criminal conviction.
Exactly. And I'm so glad you brought that up, Jeff, because so many people are fond of parroting the oft-used phrase, you can indict a ham sandwich. But you got to convict the ham sandwich. And that is the goal at the beginning of the instigation of a case, not just to get an indictment. And you don't want to swing and miss when you are talking about somebody like the president being the target of a grand jury investigation. So, yes, there's a lot that goes into this legally, politically, strategically. Remember, statute of limitations is an issue in this case as well. A lot goes on behind the scenes in deciding how to proceed. But once that ends up happening, now, of course, game day turned out not to be today, at least not so far, Jeff, like Donald Trump predicted. But will it be next week, or will there not really be a game day in terms of an arrest? But if there is any kind of an indictment, there will probably not be some high-profile perp walk and handcuffs. It'll probably be low-key. There'll be a negotiated surrender. But get this, Jeff, there will be a mugshot. Think about that. Imagine what he's going to do. Is he going to smile? Is he going to have a thumbs up like he does in all of his campaign literature? Because it is looking like it is a very sympathetic potential if they actually do get an indictment and then maybe even a conviction.
It was something that I mentioned offhandedly last hour, that there are a lot of people who are just waiting. They've been waiting for years for a mugshot of Donald Trump holding a number, case number under him. We're speaking with Wendy Patrick, career prosecutor, nationally known news analyst. She joins us on the Todd Starnes Show. Jeff Stein filling in for Todd. So at some point, and Fox is reporting that there's another witness who will testify tomorrow before this grand jury, at some point the prosecution says, that's all we have. There are no more witnesses, correct? And then the jurors make the deliberation about whether there is an indictment. And what happens when they come to their decision? Procedurally, how does this play out?
Yeah, well, procedurally, if there's an indictment, that's when the negotiation process begins. And you can imagine that's already going on behind the scenes, not just law enforcement response like we've been hearing about, but, you know, between the lawyers behind the scenes. What are we going to do? How are we going to, you know, get him to New York? Is it going to be quiet? Are there going to be cameras? Does he have to be handcuffed? You know, a lot of white-collar criminals, they are handcuffed in the front instead of in the back. There are so many very practical considerations. But let me toss one out there that I've heard people talking about.
Sure.
Convicted felons can run for president. The U.S. Constitution doesn't list the absence of a criminal record as a qualification for the presidency. It only says, you know, natural-born citizens who are at least 35, and have been a resident for U.S. for 14 years. There's all these other considerations. But felons in some states can't vote. So if somebody wanted to run for president that had been convicted of a felony, they could do so. They just maybe couldn't vote for themselves. People are looking down the line and saying, well, even if there was an indictment or a conviction, would he still run for president? I mean, it's just fascinating. There are so many moving parts and angles we can discuss on this one, Jeff.
Let me ask you finally, in a case with these sorts of charges as are being anticipated, and we don't know what a grand jury would do, we don't know if there will be an indictment or what kind of charges, but you alluded to it a moment ago and I just wanted to hone in on it. How common is it on perhaps a high-level misdemeanor for the requirement of the individual to show up in court in person, the whole handcuff thing? Obviously, there's a booking procedure for mugshots and fingerprints, et cetera, but a lot of the procedure for the common ordinary person would not require all the bells and whistles. I just wonder if, in fact, you know, people say that the president should not be treated differently than anyone else. I just wonder if he will be treated differently, but not in the way some people think. They might go, they might pull out all the stops on the circus.
That's exactly right. So we're often fond of hearing people say the president is not above the law. Well, he's also not below the law. He also deserves all of the constitutional and legal protections that anybody else who is accused of committing this crime would have. And that means he'll appear in person. But, Jeff, that's because the Manhattan court where he is being arraigned doesn't do virtual appearances. It's not that they're picking on Donald Trump. They just don't do it virtually. But with all the rest of it, you're absolutely right. If you're looking at a level of crime that wouldn't otherwise be, as you put it, pomp and circumstance and perp walk and handcuffs, then you wouldn't want to see it happen to Donald Trump. That would then be treating him unfairly. So everybody has to be very careful that this is done by the book if, in fact, an indictment comes down, to make sure that any particular criminal case that derives from it isn't jeopardized procedurally. You want everything clean and above board, and that's what I imagine will take place if there's an indictment. I'm a neutral optimist, though. I think people are going to follow the rules.
Well, you wouldn't be a member in good standing of the bar if you didn't have that as a foundational point, right? I mean, we
Amen.
Just have to assume that these
That's
things
exactly
would,
right.
would
exactly
be correct. Right. All right, folks, you follow her on Twitter, at Wendy Patrick, PhD. You see her on Newsmax and Real America's Voice, and you just heard her on the Todd Starn Show. Dr. Wendy Patrick, thank you for the insight, as always. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Jeff.
Dr. Patrick joined us on the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line. She did use the phrase about you can indict a ham sandwich. I didn't realize, but it's noon where I'm at right now in the state of Iowa. And on the news break before she came on, I literally had a ham sandwich. It was totally by coincidence. Ham and cheese, actually, if you want to get specific. And she joined us, as noted, on the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we'll speak with Doug Kelly. Now, Mr. Kelly is CEO of the American Edge Project. This has to do with big tech, but it has to do with big tech in a different way. I think you'll find that conversation interesting. Next hour, economist Steve Moore, and we'll have further conversation about a possible Trump indictment when we talk with Assistant U.S. Attorney, former Assistant U.S. Attorney, now author John O'Connor. That's still to come, but in between now and then, how about your calls at 844-747-8868? Jeff Stein filling in for Todd. Your calls next on the Todd Starn Show. Welcome back to the Todd Starn Show. Jeff Stein filling in for Todd today from the Liberty University studio. Join this coast-to-coast conversation, 844-747-8868. That's 844-747-8868. Excellent analysis in the previous segment by our guest, Dr. Wendy Patrick. She also hosts a Saturday night radio program on The Answer in San Diego, called Today with Dr. Wendy. I believe it's 6 o'clock Pacific time, 8 o'clock in the part of the world where I live, and you can listen to it online. And if you missed the conversation or would like to hear it again, after this program is over, not long after, just go to toddstarns.com and click on the Toddcast podcast link, and you can hear the whole show. So you can share it with your friends, listen to segments that you may have missed or, again, want to hear a second time. It's at toddstarns.com. And it is the Toddcast podcast. And all guests on this program, including Dr. Patrick, appear thanks to the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line. You know, now more than ever, with everything we're talking about here, indicting a former president on the thinnest of legal basis because he might beat the swamp in the next election? Yeah, with all that going on, banks potentially failing, oh my goodness. It's important to support companies and organizations that share our values. You want your money to go where you want it to go. And Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless carrier. So they share our beliefs, but then they do something about it by donating a portion of every dollar to organizations that fight for causes you care about. These are the people you want to patronize. And you do it, switch to Patriot Mobile, that is, by using promo code Todd. Now, if you switch to Patriot Mobile and use that promo code Todd, T-O-D-D, you not only get free activation, but a free gift as well. Patriot Mobile, broadest nationwide coverage. They use the same towers other carriers use. Plans to fit every budget. Great discounts, as it should be, for veteran and first responder heroes. Discounts for multi-line users as well. It's easy to switch. Just go to patriotmobile.com/Todd or call their U.S.-based customer service team. Thank you very much, U.S.-based. I had to call customer service for something else the other day, and I thought, oh, boy, this is going to be hard. U.S.-based customer service with Patriot Mobile. And here's how you do it. Call them, 972-PATRIOT. One more time, get your special discount. Get your free premier activation by using promo code Todd. You do it online by going to patriotmobile.com/Todd, patriotmobile.com/Todd, or by calling 972-PATRIOT. That's 972-PATRIOT. Very simple. Coming up in the next half hour, we're going to speak with Doug Kelly of the American Edge Project. Now, when we talk about big tech, we usually think of all the bad things that, quote, big tech does. Well, we need to use our terms correctly, because Mr. Kelly is in charge of an organization that says, all right, but we need to take care of some level of big tech in this country to make sure that China's big tech doesn't take us over. It's a very different viewpoint, and I think it's important to share with you. There are a number of examples recently where if you are concerned about competition with China, and you better be, brothers and sisters, you better be very concerned about this Chinese element trying to dominate society. Well, he's got some examples of things that really ought to make you sit up and take notice. So we tend to hear phrases like big tech be used, and it's a horrible thing, and in some of the message control ways, absolutely, we have ample evidence of that. But Doug Kelly, CEO of the American Edge Project, that's coming up in just a little more than 5 minutes with a slightly different viewpoint on it, and it's something that I think you're going to be interested in hearing his remarks on that. Is anybody else worried that China and Russia, the leaders of China and Russia, Xi and Putin respectively, are hanging out like besties at summer camp? This does not end well, right? Am I jumping to conclusions on this? It just seems to me. And by the way, when they're using phrases like my very dear friend, that is communist speak. And it means that there's a special relationship there. I'm here in the state of Iowa, and President Trump's ambassador to China was then Iowa Governor Terry Branstad, and he had had a longstanding relationship with President Xi of China, and when the announcement was made, the official Chinese news agency referred to him as a very dear friend. Again, that shows a relationship. Okay, you can interpret that very clearly. That's the phraseology they use. Do I really want Putin and Xi exchanging phone numbers and Twitter direct message handles? We'll get your thoughts on that and more in our next hour. I'm Jeff Stein, filling in for Todd. Thanks for being here on the Todd Starn Show. I dare you to find me better bumper music than what Kyle plays on this program. I'm just telling you. Kyle, thank you for all your work today, pushing the buttons, keeping this thing on the air. Dylan, takes care of all the call, screening, connects our guests. Miss Grace handles all of the booking And it makes it so easy for a monkey like me just to come in and grab a microphone and fill in for Todd. Welcome back to the Todd Starn Show. Jeff Stein filling in for Todd. And I'm joined now on the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line by a gentleman I have had on my radio program in Iowa. He is Doug Kelly. Mr. Kelly is CEO of the American Edge Project, and they are online at AmericanEdgeProject.org. Mr. Kelly, good to talk to you again. Thanks for being on the show.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for having me again. Good to talk to you.
All right. So I talked a bit about big tech before the break, but let's first have you explain who you folks are at the American Edge Project.
Sure. So the American Edge Project is a group of about 24 different organizations. And what we focus on is America is ensuring that America is number one when it comes to technology and innovation, because technology isn't just another sector of the economy. It's the very backbone of our national security, our economic competitiveness, and also our values in advancing them abroad and at home. So it matters that America remains number one.
All right. So we hear all of this talk about big tech, and it's portrayed as a bad thing. So distinguish the points that you make about quote-unquote big tech and these content censoring organizations that have been collectively called big tech. We've got some nuances here, correct?
Yeah, so let's just talk like what happened yesterday, right? The two biggest dictators in the world, China and Russia, got together. And they said, you know what? We want to rule the world according to their version of international law. Right now, look, you don't have to be a foreign policy expert to know that means trouble for America, trouble for democracy around the globe. And it should be a call to lawmakers in the U.S. to boost up our abilities and capabilities for technology and innovation, because technology is our number one check against authoritarian ambitions. And so when you talk about good tech, you talk about bad tech, at the end of the day, there's two very different versions, Jeff, of what the internet should be. There's the authoritarian version, which is closed, censoring, and controlling. And then there's the American version, which is open, accessible, and helps advance liberty both across the globe as well as the United States.
What is the concern if we in this country abdicate our production of technology materials to China, which has been the case, frankly? Obviously, now we have some other pieces of legislation designed to bring some manufacturing back here. But we heard all about supply chain issues during COVID and how China just can't keep up. So what's the danger there where we're at their mercy for the production of these key components?
Well, Jeff, you're from Iowa. I'm originally from Michigan. And both of those states were really hard hit when Congress squandered our manufacturing edge from over the last 20 to 30 years. And a lot of that was exported over to China. So the stakes are really high when it comes to technology, because like I said, it's not just another sector of the economy. It's the very backbone of everything we do. And we saw in that pandemic, the dangers of having too much of our mission critical technology being built overseas in Asian countries, or places like Taiwan that are right near China, and China believes that Taiwan is part of their country. And so one of the things that lawmakers need to do is, for very critical strategic technologies, they need to reshore them here in the United States so that we don't have any supply chain interruptions. And I'll give credit to President Trump. He raised the alarm on China like nobody ever had before. President Biden followed up on some of those things, passed the CHIPS bill, which is now helping create microchips all over the United States. And so we need to keep that momentum going when it comes to strategic technologies like microchips, like quantum computing, and like 5 and 6G connectivity.
Doug Kelly is the CEO of the American Edge Project. They're online, AmericanEdgeProject.org. He joins us on the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line on the Todd Starn Show. Jeff Stein filling in for Todd today. You posted something earlier this month on the American Edge Project website showing a trio of examples just within a short period of time about how China was putting all of their efforts behind defeating the U.S. in terms of technology. Obviously, having Xi and Putin meeting in the last few days, and I talked about it before the break, I mean, that gives me no sense of comfort at a whole bunch of levels. But this trio of stories about things in China, I suggest you think makes the point even stronger about why we need to wake up over here.
Yeah, it's funny. In just 1 week's time, right, there were three stories. There were three different areas about how dead set China is to beat the U.S. in innovation and therefore use that as a springboard to become the world superpower. You know, the first story came out when the Chinese Communist Party government got together at one of their meetings and said, hey, we're going to restructure our enormous science, technology, and finance efforts so that we can accelerate even more scientific breakthroughs. And they're focusing a lot around artificial intelligence, quantum computing, and chip making. So first, they're having this whole of society approach to we got to beat America. The second part, right, so they're building stuff there. The second story that popped up was how pervasive China's spying and hacking efforts are against the U.S. to steal the technologies they can't build to help accelerate their efforts. And then kind of the third story that I saw was about, we have all these ports across America, and China makes about 80% of the giant cranes that unload the ships. Well, it seems that some of these cranes now are actually spying tools as well that can be controlled remotely from Beijing. And Beijing can keep an eye on who our suppliers are, where we're shipping things, and other port logistics. And a lot of these ports are also used by the military. So for me, that was a perfect encapsulation of the challenge that we have with China in terms of making sure America remains technology, the technology leader in the globe, but also the extent to which those leaders will go in China to try and dethrone the United States.
Is anybody listening here, do you think? I mean, you've been involved with this effort for some time. You and I have talked on the radio a few times over the last 2 or 3 years. I mean, are people waking up, or... And this is my fear, that they're just so darn complacent and it's not interrupting their current use of Facebook, so they don't care.
Yeah, I think people are waking up. And most importantly, I think lawmakers are waking up. In the House, there's a new special committee on China that is investigating a lot of the issues that my organization, the American Edge Project, has been raising over the last couple of years about China's intent to dethrone America when it comes to technology. And it's going to be interesting to see what comes out of that committee, because they're really digging deep. But I'll tell you, we're also seeing a focus by lawmakers, too, to begin doing those things that are checking China's technology ambitions. So in some cases, that's restricting the amount of semiconductors they get, restricting other access to sensitive technologies. We're also working more closely with our allies to block their shipments of potential technology to China. And we're also seeing more that people are getting serious about checking China's digital authoritarianism, right? When I talked about there's two different versions of the internet, look, China's trying to spread their version of that internet, closed, censored, controlling, all across the globe. And we're starting to see some of our allies really kind of push back on that so that our allies are working together in conjunction against that.
Doug Kelly of the American Edge Project joining us on the Todd Starn Show, AmericanEdgeProject.org. Do you think, and you said hopefully that members of Congress are paying attention, this ought to be one of those bipartisan issues? In other words, our domestic security and the infiltration from international forces. But I don't know, given the climate, how easy it is to build coalitions. Are you finding that this is the kind of thing that if you actually can cut past all of the rubbish and actually get eye to eye with some of these folks, you can get them to understand and they might be able to cross the aisle?
Yeah, I think that's the case, right? So it's happened slowly but surely. Look, we won the Cold War because we had a bipartisan commitment to defeating an ideology that was fundamentally hostile to American interest and the interest of democracy and freedom and liberty. We have to have that same type of bipartisan, multi-administration solution-seeking to say, hey, China is an even bigger threat to America's global leadership than Russia ever was. because they can compete on more levels, both economic strength, military strength, world supplier. So we're battling them at a lot of different courts. And so it's going to take this unified effort by elected lawmakers, not just in Congress, but also at the state level to say, hey, on the defensive side, we need to stop their cyber attacks. We need to do things to check their spread of digital authoritarianism. But then also go on the offense, too, and say, you know what's going to beat them? It's if we are the number one innovator in the world of new technologies that we not only use to strengthen our military, but also then sell to other countries to help them accelerate their security. And by selling them to other countries instead of China, we get the trillions of dollars in economic gain as well. So good offense beats a good defense, but we got to play both.
AmericanEdgeProject.org is the website. Doug Kelly, the CEO of the group, thank you so much for taking time to join us on the Todd Starn Show. Best of luck with the effort, sir, and we'll talk again soon.
Hey, Jeff, thanks so much for having me. One final thing. Your listeners can make a difference by picking up their phones and calling their senators and representatives and saying, hey, we need to stand up for American innovation, stand up for American technology, and push back against what China's trying to do. Constituents calling their elected officials make a huge difference in this debate.
Thanks so much for that reminder. It's a good thing for folks to go to websites like AmericanEdgeProject.org, become aware of what the issues are, and then make their voices heard. Thank you, Mr. Kelly. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jeff. Have a great day.
You do the same, sir. Doug Kelly of the American Edge Project, AmericanEdgeProject.org, and he joined us on the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line here on this Tuesday edition of the Todd Starn Show. Coming to you from the Liberty University studio, Jeff Stein filling in for Todd today. Todd will be back behind the mic tomorrow. 844-747-8868. That's 844-747-8868. We'll take your calls in the next segment. Short break now. Back in a moment. This is the Todd Starn Show. Welcome back to the Todd Starn Show from the Liberty University studio. I'm Jeff Stein, filling in for Todd today. Could probably sneak in a call if you'd like to ring us up at 844-747-8868 before we get to the top of the hour. 844-747-8868. That's how you can reach us here in the Liberty University studio. Now, I did not get a chance to give you any information about how you can reach me. It's not terribly important. It's mostly important that you know how to reach this show through that phone number, toddstarns.com. You can follow Todd on social media like Twitter and Facebook and Gab and Getter at Todd Starns. He's on Instagram at Todd Starns FNC, and he's back on LinkedIn. Geez, I can remember it wasn't all that long ago that Grace posted something that led Todd to get suspended for more than a year from LinkedIn, but he's back on now, and you can find Todd on LinkedIn as well. I am at Iowa Politics, I-O-W-A Politics, so you can find me on Twitter, not that Facebook, thanks, Twitter and Instagram, Truth Social, Parlor, Getter. I am at IOWA Politics. My radio station is KXEL. The website is KXEL.com, and I have a program that airs right before Todd's, 8 to 11 Central Time weekday mornings, and you can listen online or download any of the podcasts of that. But one of the things we do, that's a very long way of saying that we do a poll question of the day every day on my program, and I just put up today's poll question, and I'm inviting you to weigh in. So you can either go to the live show blog at toddstarns.com. Grace is going to put a link there for it. It's probably there now. She works so quickly. If not, go to KXEL.com, KXEL.com/poll, and here's my poll question of the day, and I invite you and Starns Nation to weigh in. If former President Trump is indicted, how will that affect your views on the 2024 presidential race? A, I'm even more solidly on board. B, another example of why it's time to move on from Trump. C, I was already off of Trump before this. D, no impact. I'll evaluate many factors in making my choice. Or E, something else altogether. If former President Trump is indicted, how will that affect your views on the 2024 presidential race? Go to the live show blog at toddstarns.com and click on the link for the poll, or go directly to it at my station, kxel.com/poll, and you can weigh in. Mike is on the phone at 844-747-8868, calling in from where I am in the state of Iowa. Mike, thanks for calling in on the show today. How are you?
I'm fine, Jeff. How about you?
Well, I am well. Where are you at in the good state of Iowa?
I'm out my shop. You know, I live a few miles from your station, about 8 miles south of you. And I'm out here in my shop, and I always told you I was going to call, and I finally decided today's the day because you're on, and I love Todd, but I love Jeff, too. So we got a lot of things in common. So I understand you're talking about Mr. Trump. And,
yes, sir.
I support him. I still support him. What's happening to him is an absolute shame. That's how corrupt our government is. And our current president, well, I can't say over the radio what I really think of him because you'd cut me off in a heartbeat, but I just think he's a disgusting, the most worthless president in my lifetime. And I'm getting close to 80 years old, so I've seen a lot of them. I thought some of the other ones were bad, but this one here takes the cake. He makes President Carter look good. So it's just my thought.
No, and that took a lot to make, and with all due respect to Mr. Carter, his health situation not good, but as a president, wow, it really was a low point. Now, Mike, I know you from coming to visit us at various KXEL events, and you weigh in often on the poll question of the day. So if President Trump is indicted, how does that affect your views?
Well, I don't know how they could get any worse when it comes to our current government, what we have in Washington, D.C., but I support him. I do support DeSantis if he was to run. If he's the nomination, I support him totally, too. He's a good man. I would love to see Trump and DeSantis. I don't think it's ever going to happen, but I'd love to see him get together, and Trump would be our president, and then DeSantis the following 8 years. I think that would be a blessing for America.
We're up against the clock, Mike. Thank you so much for calling, and thank you for your service in the Armed Forces for America, and I'm so glad that you did call. It's a regular listener to my program back here at home, and true to his word, he said he was going to call Todd's show someday, and I'm glad he made it today. Hey, we've got another hour. Steve Moore's going to join us, I think, right after the top of the hour. Hope you come back. I'm Jeff Stein in for Todd, and this is the Todd Starn Show.
From the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's conservative blowtorch.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah.
Wherever you're listening across this, the greatest nation God ever blessed, welcome to hour number three of a Tuesday edition of the Todd Starn Show, coast to coast on more than 100 outstanding radio stations, and streaming live, among other places, at toddstarns.com. Hello, fellow patriots, I'm Jeff Stein, filling in for Todd today. He'll be back behind the air chair tomorrow. Behind the air chair. No, he sits in the air chair behind the microphone. You see what happens when you do too much radio? You just start blending all your words together. I apologize. We'll try to take it a little slower. Todd will be back tomorrow. Of course, the way this hour started, he might be coming in any moment to the Liberty University studio. But again, Jeff Stein from News Talk 1540 KXEL in Cedar Rapids and Waterloo, Iowa, pleased to be filling in for Todd today. And I hope you join the conversation. There's so much to talk about, so much going on in the world, and we love to get your comments. So join the conversation at 844-747-8868. That's 844-747-8868. 888-344-8868. We'll talk about some economics issues this hour. We'll also talk about the pending indictment of Donald Trump. And just after the bottom of the hour, we'll speak with a former assistant U.S. attorney and author. His name is John O'Connor. He lays this thing out so well. And so we'll get him to join us around the bottom of the hour. Steve Moore, senior economist at FreedomWorks, will join us here in just a few moments. And again, your calls at 844-747-8868. Now, today is Tuesday, March 21st, and I know a lot of you listening are in rural America. And so I want to make note of the fact that this is the 50th anniversary of something called National Ag Day, to support agriculture producers, farm families across the country. And if you're listening to a place that's not one of these good rural areas, well, I assume you eat, I assume you wear clothes, I assume you drive vehicles. If that's the case, then you owe a real debt of gratitude to the American farmer. They literally put food on your table. You know, food does not come from the Kroger or whatever grocery store you go to. It doesn't. That's where you get it. But it comes from the farm. The cloth that goes into making your clothing, again, produced by cotton farmers, etc. And we use a product called soybeans, which has really, in the last 50 years, just exploded in terms of uses. Some of the roadways that you drive on, tires, the upholstery in the car, so many things come from all of these crops. So while every day really ought to be Ag Day, this is the date on the calendar that is specially designated as National Ag Day. So if you are in rural America, if you are a producer, a family farmer, a salute to all of you. You are the ones that keep this nation going in the middle part of the nation, primarily the area that those on the coast, the elites, just fly over and kind of look down upon. We know that it's rural America that keeps this country going. And I am so pleased to be a lifelong Iowa resident, where we raise the most corn, the most pork, the most so many other things, eggs in the country. It is really a testament to fortitude to be a farmer in the United States in the year 2023. And as soon as we get done here, I'm out the door. The Iowa Secretary of Agriculture invited me to give the address tonight at the annual Iowa Ag Leaders Dinner. 400 or 500 people there. So I'm really looking forward to sharing some stories with them tonight and having a chance to say thank you in person. 844-747-8868. That's how you can reach us. Let's take a break now. We'll come back on the other side from the Liberty University studio. I'm Jeff Stein, and this is the Todd Starn Show. Welcome back to the Todd Starn Show from the Liberty University studio. Jeff Stein filling in for Todd today. He'll be back tomorrow. Joining us now on the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line, senior economist for FreedomWorks, Stephen Moore. Mr. Moore, Jeff Stein in for Todd. Thank you for the time, sir.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks to be here for having me.
Well, it's good to talk to somebody from the Midwest who has common sense, because that seems to be in short supply these days. What do you think, and I make note because, as I recall, you're an Illinois native, what about the Fed tomorrow? What should they do to not make the situation worse?
Boy, is that a complicated question. So, first of all, I think it's important for your listeners to know why we're in this potential crisis, and that is it all circles back to the massive multi-trillion-dollar spending spree by Joe Biden, which is a disgrace. It is putting our country in incredible financial peril. And so what happened was, when all this massive spending came out, then of course inflation happened, because that's what happens when you just put free money into the economy. And then when the inflation happened, the Fed had to start raising interest rates, right? And so what happened next was that these banks that held a lot of government bonds, all of a sudden, when interest rates go up, the bonds go down in value. So this is why the most important thing we have to do to stop this, potential banking crisis. And by the way, I think it's going to be contained. And I don't want people to think that they're going to lose money out of their banking, because your deposits are insured in these banks one way or the other. But I do think the most important thing to bring inflation down is to have the government stop spending and borrowing so much money, rather than having the Fed raise interest rates. But they probably will raise rates by another 0.25 percentage point tomorrow. And, when you've got, we still have over 6% inflation in the economy, so there's still a long way to get from 6% to 2%.
As you pointed out the last time you were a guest on this program when I was on this side of the microphone, the inflation rate when Joe Biden took over was not even 1.5%. It's still four times greater than it was when the man took over, and this is some sort of great victory because of how bad it had gotten.
Yeah, it went up to 9.2% last summer, which that's like, six times higher than it was when Trump was president. And so we're still, 6% inflation. We can't live with that. That's really destroying the finances of middle class families. So, the average family since Biden has been president has lost about $4,000 in purchasing power, which is a lot for a family of four living with maybe $75,000 of income. And so, now here's the problem for the Fed, though. And on one hand, the Fed wants to get inflation down because that's the priority and the mission of the Fed is to maintain a stable dollar. So they've got to bring inflation down. That makes them impels them to raise interest rates. On the other hand, raising interest rates more will put these banks in more trouble. So you can see they're truly between a rock and a hard place right now in terms of what the right course of direction is.
Economist Stephen Moore joining us on the Todd Starn Show. Jeff Stein filling in for Todd today. When you have Secretary Yellen saying, don't worry, we'll cover, everybody will be fine, there's not an unlimited supply of money unless they just keep printing more. And as you've noted, the consequences of that are even more dire than what we have now. I mean, are they truly making this bad situation potentially worse by issuing these great promises that they hope will alleviate stress with regard to the security of the banking system?
Well, I have to say I've been very disappointed with Janet Yellen. She was former head of the Federal Reserve and, someone who's been a pretty respected economist. But ever since she became part of the Biden administration, she's just drunk this Kool-Aid that, I don't know if any of you or any of your listeners have ever heard this term before. It's called modern monetary theory. And for those who've never heard of that, it's this concept that some, second-rate economists at some second-rate universities came up with about 5 or 6 years ago, that the federal government can just spend and borrow as much money as it wants to. It doesn't have to worry about the debt. It doesn't have to worry about how much it's spending because, we're the world reserves currency and the rest of the world will just keep, borrowing money from us or lending us money, and therefore we don't have to worry about it. Well, that's a laughable thesis. But the Biden administration came in and actually put that into place. They actually took this crackpot idea and they actually exercised it. And so, of course, now you see the damage that has been done. I mean, somebody has to show me any time or any place in the world where, a government that borrows massive amounts of money, is where that story has a happy ending, because I can't find one. It didn't work in Argentina. It didn't work in Venezuela. It didn't work in Bolivia. It didn't work in Greece and Mexico and all these other countries. So I wish it were that easy. Wouldn't it be a wonderful world if all you had to do was just print money?
Well, it would make my life easier, but at least on the front end. But I don't. It has bad consequences because, as you know,
of course. But these people don't think it has. They're so simple minded. They think all you have to do is just to have the printing presses. All we have to worry about is running out of ink.
Well, it's like the people who say, I must have money. I still have checks left for my checking account. That doesn't work.
That's a good analogy.
So when we're talking about, all right, the debt goes up because of this massive spending. which then requires interest rates to go up to control the resultant inflation. But then that means the interest on the debt skyrockets. I mean, don't see how anyone who knows anything about numbers looks at this and says, oh, we've got this under control.
Right. I mean, I think most level-headed Americans realize, and I don't care if you're Democrat, Republican, conservative, liberal, you know, this is not a very wise economic course. And so it's like you said, you know, it'd be like saying just the more debt I have, the you know, the better financial situation I'm in, when it's just the opposite. So, you know, again, just to continue the circle. So what that means is to get out of this crisis is that Kevin McCarthy, who's the Speaker of the House, has to hang tough and say to Joe Biden, absolutely not. We are never, never, never going to give you an unlimited credit card. Because, you know, that's what Joe Biden's saying. He's saying, I'm not even going to negotiate on the debt ceiling. You're just going to have to give me an unlimited credit card. And no limit on how much I can borrow. Well, that's absurd. That's obscene. And so I hope the Republicans don't blink here, because they got truth, justice, and the American way on their side to say, no, 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 no. We're not going to give you a debt limit extension until you put forward a plan to balance the budget. Let me make this simple for people. Let's say, you know, you're running a small business, and let's say you had a bad couple of years and so you lost some money. So now you know, let's say you're $1 million in debt. So you go to the bank and say, hey, I need a loan or I need a line of credit, you know, because I've got this deficit, you know, that I have. Well, what is the first thing that that banker is going to ask you? Okay, let's see your plan for getting out of debt. Right? And if you don't have a plan, they're just going to kick you right out of the office. But Biden's saying, I want an extension on my credit. I want another loan, even though I don't have any plan to get out of debt. That's crazy.
The president decided that the first veto he would hand down had to do with a bipartisan bill that would limit mandatory ESG. What does that tell us about the mindset of the administration with regard to, well, I'd say capitalism? That seems a little snarky, but that's what comes to my mind here.
So the veto was really an abhorrent veto. It basically says that, well, so under the Trump era, and as you know, I worked for Donald Trump as one of the senior economists, we had a rule that had been longstanding that said, you know, the fiduciary duty of like a pension manager is to people who put the money in the pension system, the workers, is to make sure that you're getting the best return on that money you can, right? It's like you go to Morgan Stanley or somebody to invest your money, you want somebody who's going to increase your return. That's what happens when you invest your money. And so what the left is saying is, no, you have to be worried about global warming and racial justice and, you know, LGBTQ and all these other issues that have nothing to do with, you know, the return on your money. And so it turns out that this ESG funds perform much worse than funds that just get the best return they can. And Joe Biden basically vetoed a bill which would require funds to get the best return. Now, this is a real clear and present danger to people's pensions. They're putting politics over people's pensions. They're gambling with your and my money.
It is a much different situation if you, Steve Moore, said, I really want to support these companies that do A, B, and C, and you do that with your own money. But when it's a fund, and potentially I have no say in how it's invested, for if I were a government employee, for example, that's where we get into a real dangerous situation. Because, again, there's a fiduciary duty, and this is absolving those managers of that legal duty.
Well, that's well said. I mean, you said it quite well. And, in fact, you know, let's keep it simple. Let's say I really care about climate change. Now, it's not something that keeps me up at night, but, you know, some of my friends really care about climate change. So I totally respect them when they say, you know what, I'm not going to invest in fossil fuel companies because I have a moral problem with that. Okay. It's a free country, right? You know, divest in oil and gas companies. But but that's your own individual choice. When you put money in a retirement fund, a pension fund,
you don't, you're just counting on that person managing the money. They're not going to put their own personal biases in how they invest the money. They're going to try to find the best return. And so that's why this is dangerous. And incidentally, these ESG funds did absolutely terribly last year because they did divest in oil and gas companies. And guess what companies had the highest return last year?
Tell me.
Oil and gas. they sold the very stocks that had the highest return.
Yes.
How stupid
yes.
was that?
Well, it is in concert with everything else. Remaining 60 seconds, and we barely have that. Put our minds at ease. I've got deposits. I've got investments. Is an average person, are we going to be okay here? Do we have to do anything?
Well, your deposits will be. Your deposits, if you have a savings deposit in a bank, you don't have to worry about it. You don't have to run to the bank, take your money out, because we stopped bank runs back in the 1930s with federal deposit insurance. But if you're an investor, I can't tell you everything's going to be very, you know, honky-dory, because I am worried. I think we're, at some point in this country, we will face a financial crisis if we don't get our finances in order. I can't tell you whether it's going to happen in 3 weeks or 3 months or 3 years, but I can tell you this story will not have a happy ending if we don't start using some fiscally responsible behavior and balancing our budget.
You folks tell me if there's anybody better on this stuff than Stephen Moore. Thank you so much, sir, for being on the Todd Starnes Show. I hope we talk again soon.
I hope so, too. Thanks so much for having me.
FreedomWorks Senior Economist Stephen Moore, freedomworks.org is the website, and you know Mr. Moore's work, and oh my goodness, just lays it out there. Again, so glad that we were able to get him on the program. We'll return to a conversation about the possible indictment of a former president. That's after this break. I'm Jeff Stein, filling in for Todd from the Liberty University studio, and this is the Todd Starnes Show. Welcome back to the Todd Starnes Show, final half hour of the program for this Tuesday. I'm Jeff Stein, filling in for Todd. He'll be back tomorrow, just taking care of some business outside of the office today, and it's always a privilege for me to fill in here in the Liberty University studio. John O'Connor is a former assistant U.S. attorney in Northern California, long career as an attorney, and you may recall a fellow by the name of Mark Felt. Well, Mark Felt revealed late in his life that he was the famous Deep Throat from Watergate. John O'Connor was Mark Felt's lawyer at that time. He has since gone on to write a couple of books and host a regular podcast on things related to Watergate and the Washington Post and some things you did not know about how all of that went down. Mr. O'Connor also is well-versed with all aspects of the legal system. And John O'Connor joins us on the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line here on the Todd Starnes Show. Mr. O'Connor, Jeff Stein filling in for Todd. Good to talk to you, sir.
Good to be with you, Jeff.
I wanted to have you on the program today, and in full disclosure, you were on my program here in Iowa yesterday, and you laid out this Trump indictment situation so well, I wanted to share it with the national audience. So in terms of what it is that this Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg, what we believe he's trying to, the case that he's trying to fashion, set that up for us, please.
Yeah, first of all, Jeff, the statute, the New York statute under which he's being prosecuted for false or misleading financial entries is normally a misdemeanor, and it is normally a two-year statute. The only way it becomes a felony with a five-year statute of limitations is if the false financial statement was intended to cover up another crime. Now, it's past the two-year statute. So this prosecutor is trying to say, okay, Trump made a false financial record, and it was intended to cover up another crime. Therefore, it's a felony. Let's take both of those. First prong, yeah. The false financial statement in New York. He said that the payment to Stormy Daniels, he listed it as a legal expense. Well, right. In my view, it probably is a legal expense, although somebody can say, well, okay, it's not really a legal expense. It's, some of it is a settlement payment, it's hush money, whatever you want to call it. So he might even called it on another record legal fees, and so that may have been a little bit misleading because only some of it was a legal fee. So you know, it may be misleading a bit, but the secondly, the prior...
Well, let me just jump in. Let me jump in on that just to draw the loop on it. If you're paying a settlement to avoid a lawsuit, I don't know what else you categorize that as other than a legal expense. It's a broad category, is it not? Or am I just being too inventive here?
No, I think you're absolutely right. And that's why, Jeff, the prior prosecutor, who's a straight arrow, a liberal, Cyrus Vance Jr., Cyrus Vance said, there isn't a case here. I'm not indicting this. And here's the problem with it. The bigger problem than that particular issue as to whether this was false, the bigger one is it meant to hide another crime? Well, first of all, the statutory interpretation is the crime has to be a New York crime. It doesn't say it in the statute, but, you know, can you pull in a Montana crime or a federal crime? So what the prosecutor's trying to do is say, well, the other crime he was trying to hide was a federal crime. It was that same expenditure, which was a false election, an election expenditure that he didn't record as an election expenditure. Now, let's think about that. First of all, let's assume that you interpret the statute so that, okay, if you hide a federal crime, this applies. All right, is it a federal crime for Trump not to list a payment to a woman as an election expenditure? Well, as Tucker Carlson said, it was a very good point last night. If it is an election expenditure, does that mean if you contribute to somebody's campaign, it's okay for them to spend money on their ex-girlfriend or one-night stand? Of course not. That's not an election expenditure. Come on. Everybody would be doing that if that was an election expenditure. So the last thing it is an election expenditure. And the Federal Elections Commission said, no way is this a crime. You know, and they didn't even say Hillary Clinton's was a crime when she actually did make an election expenditure on the Russiagate stuff and the lawyers there. They fined her, but they didn't find it to be a crime. So hers was very egregious, and yet that still wasn't a crime. Now, Trump, this is not a crime at all. If you do something, anything that might be potentially embarrassing to you does not mean, and it may affect the election, does not mean it's an election expenditure. You know, I may spend money on a weight loss diet, does not mean that that's an election expenditure, even though I want to be thinner for my voters. So the whole thing is absurd. The federal people have said this is not a crime. So this Alvin Bragg has this thing weak on three counts. The New York crime is not a crime, the federal crime is not a crime, and the New York statute probably doesn't allow him to bootstrap in a federal crime versus a New York crime. So this, all the commentators say, this is a horribly weak claim, and what it does is it throws the entire, if you're an anti-Trumper, this is the worst thing you could hope for because it makes you look bad if you support this. And yet all the media, the more leftist media, are supporting this type of crime without really examining it. It really, really looks bad. And if you want to divide the country, this is exactly the kind of ridiculous prosecution you should have. This prosecutor is a Soros prosecutor who literally lets rapists out of jail, literally lets rapists out, and certainly lets all kinds of other people out. And yet he goes after Trump on this thing with 10 people working on the case where people are getting mugged and robbed every day in New York. He's got 10 people on this thing for Trump. Come on.
Well, obviously he finds Trump to be a greater threat to the citizenry than convicted rapists and robbers and those that have no bail. If in fact it is, and I agree with you as a lawyer, I agree with you, this is the thinnest tissue of that you can try to stitch together. How is it then that we all just assume there will be an indictment, and frankly, we assume there will be a conviction if there is a trial?
Well, first of all, there's no doubt there'll be an indictment because this guy's pretty much said so. They've got a grand jury. There was a lawyer who invited himself to the grand jury to talk about how Michael Cohen's a lawyer. His Michael Cohen's former lawyer did that. Mm-hmm. And yet, it was very clear from his time in the grand jury, although he can't reveal exactly what was said by law, but he said they weren't interested in what he had to say. He knows, everybody knows there will be an indictment. That's number one. Number two, I think there's a good chance for a conviction just because you're going to find the ability to get a whole panel of Democratic voters and Trump on the jury, and New York City is a hotbed of Trump hating. So I do think there can be a conviction here. I think it's going to be now. Probably, if I had to predict, I'd probably say this is probably one ripe for a hung jury. I don't think you're going to get a brave judge that's going to toss the case out. That's also political suicide. So the politics of New York work against Trump. I think he knows it. The interesting thing about this will have a tremendously divisive effect on our country, as I said, because I think this case is so weak that it's going to make Trump stronger in the eyes of his followers, and it's going to make him more fiercely loyal. And I think these guys think they're going to destroy Trump. I don't think so. I'm not a Trumpy. I'm not a big Trump lover. I'm not a big Trump hater. I like what he did for the country very much, and I can defend it. I can defend about 90% of what he did, and the other stuff, I'd say that's pretty good. 90% is a pretty good mark.
True.
But I do think that this is going to strengthen Trump and have the unintended consequence that the Trump haters are trying to avoid, which is they think they're going to destroy Trump. They ain't going to destroy Trump with this one.
So if there was an indictment, would be an indictment, and if there would be a conviction, there's obviously going to be an appeal. From a calendar standpoint, and I don't pretend that you know the exact wait time for cases, but you've worked in the system for a half century. You've got a pretty good idea. From time of indictment to trial and then resolution of an appeal, we are well past the 2024 general election, correct?
Well, at least, you know, I think it's going to be, I think that you got a really good point. I don't know that the appeal is that important. I think it's an appealable case,
yeah.
But I certainly think the trial is going to be a race. I mean, here we are, 2023. I suppose it can probably go to trial within a year. Trump can stretch it out, and I'm not sure the prosecutors are ready to go, but I suppose it will go to trial before the election. I think that's what they're hoping.
Well, I guess my point was that if we're looking for an ultimate resolution, those who want to get Trump, all they need is a mugshot that they can put out and plaster around the country. They can get a conviction with a sympathetic jury in New York. Who cares how the appeal comes out, because it'd be long after an election before he'd get his good name back. And that, again, if your purpose is justice, that's one thing. If your purpose is to, quote, get Trump, well, that's a whole different scenario.
I agree with you. It's for the anti-Trumpers, it's perfect timing, because I suspect that he might get convicted. I would probably, if I had to put money on it, I'd probably put money that he's going to get convicted. And if I had to put money on it, I'd probably go slightly toward him winning on appeal. As long as he gets a decent straight down the middle of appellate court, I think they're going to have real trouble upholding this thing. There's so many bad things about it. But he's not going to get, like you say, he's not going to get his name back before the election. But I think all this does, again, is divide us. And there are people, if you look at the way CNN is handling this and the way Scarborough's handling it and people like that, you want to say, you guys, you know, you've just shown that you really don't care about justice. You care about the man. Like Stalin's Commissar Beria, show me the man and I'll show you the crime. And that's what this is. If this is the only thing you can do to Trump, it's pretty weak. Now, to be that said, you know, this Jack Smith may have a little bit more of a substantive shot on Trump, at least that would look halfway like it's a decent prosecution. I think the evidence is thin on that one, too, but I think Smith may be able to come up with some obstruction of justice charge. But That'll be a while. So this is the one, as you point out, that will probably linger and be there before the election. His mugshot will be there. You know, they'll be calling him a criminal. And, you know, you talk about a week when, you know, the guy's wife is pregnant. I was at the golf tournament, by the way. Interestingly enough, my client owns the golf course in Tahoe, and I happened to be there that year. I usually don't see it. I miss Stormy and Donald hooking up, but think about that. That happened in 06, I'm going to say, 06 or 07, and now we're in 23, and Melania's pregnant, and I don't think it's a good look, you know. I mean, many married men out there listening to this would say, yeah, my wife's pregnant. You know, I start looking at other women. It's embarrassing to him personally. And you can understand why he'd want to keep it on the down low here. Stormy Daniels took advantage of it when the election came up, and she was guilty of extortion. She extorted money from him. Not the first time, not the last time. You get an NDA from some famous person who wants to keep it quiet. So this whole thing is just such a small little thing, well in the past. Now, meanwhile, we have a former president, Bill Clinton, who basically lied under oath in a proceeding that was underway with Paula Jones. And understandably, many people said, look, we're going to impeach a president because he lied about an affair with a woman? Come on. Yes, it's a lie. Yes, it's a crime, but we're not going to impeach him. And there was a great backlash led by the media, who yeah. probably... downplayed the fact that the guy did lie under oath and, you know, and so forth and so on, and obstructed justice in that case. But nonetheless, I think if you don't have a partisan media, you should have a media that says, look, this is really piddling stuff. It's much ado about nothing. The law, the old phrase is, the law does not care about trifles. The Latin phrase is de minimum non curat lex. It's a legal maxim. The law should not care about trifles. And this is a trifling prosecution, Jeff.
John O'Connor, excellent analysis. I appreciate your time greatly. We're up against a break now, but we want to remind people, Mr. O'Connor's website is postgatebook.com. His first book about the Washington Post and Watergate was called Postgate. The name of his podcast is The Mysteries of Watergate, and there is a volume with that as well, The Mysteries of Watergate, What Really Happened. John O'Connor, thanks for being on the Todd Starn Show. We'll talk again soon.
Jeff, good talking to you. See ya.
Postgatebook.com, and he is John O'Connor. And he joined us on the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line here on the Todd Starn Show from the Liberty University studio. We've got another segment left. Time for your calls at 844-747-8868. I'm Jeff Stein, in for Todd, and this is the Todd Starn Show. To the Todd Starn Show from the Liberty University studio. Jeff Stein filling in for Todd today. He'll be back tomorrow at the same time. I have told you folks before how much my life changed when I ordered my pillow. Now, nobody paid me to do it. This was just a matter of literally I was whining about not getting a good night's sleep, and my wife said, let's try this thing. And it was instantaneous. I am not kidding you. It totally changed my sleep. Best thing ever, right? Well, how do you improve upon that? It's been 20 years. How do you improve upon something that changes people's lives? Well, they've done it. It's MyPillow 2.0. Yes, it still has the patented adjustable fill of the original pillow, but now has a brand new fabric made with a temperature regulating thread. So this MyPillow 2.0, the softest, smoothest, and coolest pillow you'll ever loan. Now, exclusively for listeners of the Todd Starn Show, the MyPillow 2.0 is buy one, get one free if you use promo code STARNS. I don't know what more incentive you need. You already know MyPillow is the best. So now it's MyPillow 2.0, and you don't have to worry about flipping it over to find a cool side because it's temperature-regulated fabric? Come on now. 100% made in the USA. 10-year warranty. 60-day money-back guarantee. all the same stuff that has made this such a great American success story. Here's what you do. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener square, and that's how you'll get the buy one, get one free offer of MyPillow 2.0. MyPillow.com, radio listener square, promo code STARNS, or call 800-839-8506. That's 800-839-8506, and get your MyPillow 2.0s now. You will be so, so glad you did. Thanks to everyone who called in and participated in our conversation today. Thanks to Grace and Dylan and Kyle. Mr. Starnes, as always, for the privilege of being here. Jeff Stein for Todd. This is the Todd Starnes Show.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.